Welcome, folks, to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. Every week, diving deep into the truth of Catholic social teaching and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from Iowa Catholic Radio's Mercy Live Up Studios.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Dr. Bud Maher.
We are coming to you live from America. Me, I am in Des Moines, Iowa, where I am the director of the Zeta Institute for Foundation and Ethics and Leadership and the director of Mission and Ministry at Mercy College of Health Sciences. You can check out either of those, mchs.edu or zetainstitute.com. Bud is out in the land of the French fries, Pittsburgh, America, where he's at NINS. Bud, what do you do there?
I'm the director at the National Institute for Newman Studies. You can check us out at thenewmaninstitute.org. If you ever want to visit, we are passionate about our French fries. I took one of our scholars out last night, and French fries on the sandwich, he was amazed. French fries improve anything. Try it.
So one of the things, as the world works out, Bud's child came into this world. And again, yep. Bud, we want to say congratulations, and we're glad that it sounds like you're getting a little bit of sleep at least. So real quick, how's it to be a father for, what is this, like the 12th time or something, right?
Oh, no, I can't complain about this one. He's been sleeping great. You know, I think people's parent vision of parenthood is very much impacted by the child they receive. So we were breezing along, going through four kids, and then Dominic came along, and as an infant, he was just cranky. And we've discovered after the fact that he was probably allergic to milk or something.
Come on, you know,
fuck up. But this one is a welcome change of pace. He's been sleeping well.
Okay, good. Well, so what that necessitated is the Newman Association had their conference where Bud was going to be like, I think it was going to be, you were going to compete with the spotlight with Bishop James Conley, but lucky for him, you bowed out. So that means I was there awash in a sea of people that Bud knew, and I only knew through emails. But don't worry, Bud, they all like me better now because you weren't there to interfere.
I didn't lose any friends in this deal?
No. They all spoke highly of you. You evidently, I didn't get to see this, you spoke on Zoom on computer. You were like, you christened their endeavors into technology. So I'm all like, what a bunch of nerds. I just think it's funny that you are like the forefront of the technological regime that Newman scholars the world over will now have to fear.
Yeah, I was a strange like pioneer of that endeavor, but I felt like it went okay. I only saw half of the room asleep, so that's a pretty good batting record.
Now, the reason we're bringing up here on the show is that, so this week and next week we'll be live, but we're actually formatting interviews that I did for that show for August. So one of the things that we wanted to do, like we've said with our shows, be a sort of middle voice between the sort of intro catechetical formation that people get, but then also on the back end, you know, you don't have to go all the way to academia in order to deepen your faith. So we thought, what better way to go talk with some scholars at an academic conference, but have them talk about what their subjects were in a way people out in the pew, so to speak, can deepen their faith, hear about John Henry Newman. We have some fantastic interviews for you that will be played as episodes later this month. I'm really looking forward to it. And, Bud, I just want to say thank you for kind of coming up with the idea. It was a fantastic time, and I think our listeners will benefit as well.
Well, you know, sometimes I kind of tongue-in-cheek make fun of the academic world because being embedded in it, you see some of the craziness. But all that being said, you know, there's a lot of great people out there who love Christ, love the church, and it's really fun. I think what people will get a glimpse of with those interviews is like those who are doing the spade work of really like spiritual formation among young people. So it'll be great to hear.
Well, as always, we're brought to you by Cartridge World. They underwrite our show, 801 73rd Street, Windsor Heights. You can go online, check out their stuff. But I guess that means that you're going to be printing out either birth announcements or maybe feeding schedules. Or please tell me that you're at least making your children do half of the work, right? Like at least taking the diapers out or something like that.
I'd like to pretend like this was a high calling and, you know, like the baptism is on Saturday, so some printing related to that. But my major printing needs for the next few weeks will probably be fantasy football cheat sheets.
Oh, that's good. That is coming up. Bud, can you remind the listeners who's the reigning champion in our league?
I think it's you.
That would be me, bud. Yes, yeah. Reigning champion. If you go to Cartridge World,
I know who
you
was
can,
last place.
That's print out Bo is the champ at least for a few more months. Also, as always, underwritten by Mercy College of Health Sciences. Man, bud, we're really starting to finish up. I don't know about you, but in my class, we have presentations next week, and then the week after that will be their finals. There's still time to join for fall. And then, of course, the thing to press with Mercy College is you can start anytime, fall, spring, summer. So if fall seems like it's coming too quickly, you can look to the spring. But always a way to get connected to start reinvigorating your career, answer the call to serve others.
Yeah, I was on Facebook last night and saw a photo of like a group of students from one of our previous classes. And, you know, like it was a moment of nostalgia. But I think really the medical community in Des Moines has been impacted by all those Mercy grads who are going out there. So I feel honored to be a part of it all.
MCHS.edu, and like I said, there's still time to start for fall, but you can get plugged in the spring and summer as well. When you say that you see pictures of, like, Mercy students, they don't have, like, shirts that go, like, you know, it's like you and me with the big, like, you know, the smoking no red, you know, with a cross out or anything like that. So
I think one of the T-shirts said, I survived servant leadership.
There you go.
2016.
Well, we're coming up on the break, bud, but when we get back, we're going to deal with the concept of historical distortion when talking about the church. And I think what we mean by that is there's a way in which we judge current events against a backdrop of things that, quite frankly, either didn't happen or that we sort of take out of context. It's going to be a really good talk. So I want folks to stick around because I think this is actually, even though we'll be talking about the past, has a lot to do with the present. And hopefully, if you have any questions, you'll be able to throw them out because it's just Bud and I today. We are our own guests. So this is The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Marr. Stick around. We'll be back after this. Yeah, bud, did you hear that? The eagle is back! Why is the eagle back? Very easy. Because
our listeners asked for it.
Someone, yeah, not only did people keep asking for it, they paid for it, folks. they
we
went to
the email and said, phase out the horse, we need the eagle back, I'll pay you to do so.
Yeah, so they were donating to our...
personal check.
Yeah, yeah. No, not to Bo and Bud. Patreon.com/ICR. But if you have any other ideas or anything you want to say, we always have the Zip Whip line. 515-223-1150. Hashtag UCG for the uncommon good. The Zip Whip line. 515-223-1150. We're waiting with bated breath to hear back from people happy that the eagle is back. Or loathing it, and you know, maybe we can get into a bidding war, but we'll see how things go, bud. This is The Uncommon Good. Like I said, we'll be back after this.
Have you ever wanted to see the scriptures come alive like never before? Well, you're in luck. Join Iowa Catholic Radio and Monsignor Frank Bagnano for our second pilgrimage to the Holy Land. This is a special edition, extended 12-day trip while you walk in the footsteps of our Lord Jesus Christ. The longer trip means we'll have a little more time for extra sightseeing at a slower pace and time for prayer. The pilgrimage will depart on January 24th and return on February. Faith Journey, the Catechetical Institute, will be hosting a talk by Jeff Cavins on Wednesday, August 1st at 6:30 p.m. at the Pastoral Center downtown. Jeff is an international Catholic speaker and the founder of the Catechetical Institute in St. Paul, Minnesota. He will be talking about the activated disciple and providing information about the next class at the Catechetical Institute here in Des Moines, which begins this September. The talk is free and open to the public, so please join us.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Doing what is challenging because it's right. That's Blackbird Investments. In 2013, Blackbird Investments was born from the inspiration of St. Kevin. When it comes to building real estate, they look for creative solutions by forming strategic alliances, creating energy-efficient buildings, and engaging with local craftsmen. At its core, Blackbird Investments believes in giving buildings a new life. BlackbirdInvest.com. Blackbird Investments. Doing what is challenging because it's right.
We're back with The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr. So, Bud, You know, one of the things you always worry about when you have a radio show is letting many people know how big of dorks you are.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll have to admit, I think, right up front that our show is a bit inspired by Twitter today. I don't feel anybody throwing any tomatoes at us yet. So let us explain.
Yeah.
Clearly, in the news today, we don't need to remind anyone that in the Catholic world, there's a lot to talk about, a lot to read about. A lot to ponder and pray about, a lot to have penance about. But on Twitter, there's a special way in which anything from the very serious, the McCarrick scandals, all the way down to maybe the frivolous, like people talking about future world orders that we will have no actual participation in, that Twitter is a place for people to sort of run their mouths. And usually this is not very edifying for souls. But if you've been on Twitter long enough, you've probably heard about weird Catholic Twitter. We've sort of carved out our own place on Twitter that gets beyond bizarre. And like I said, I promise, don't turn off the dial yet. We will not be talking about Twitter for much longer. But the idea is this, is that in many ways, you and I were talking about some of these heated debates between very serious ones to very silly ones. And we started to notice something, that people really weaponize the past in particular ways. Is that a good way to put it, Bud?
Yeah, you know, I think with what you're saying, that sometimes I wrestle with, you know, is social media worth it or not? Like, is this good for my soul? But you can stumble onto some, you know, fascinating conversations. And I've actually had some good dialogue on Twitter. But like you said, in these inter-Catholic debates, or sometimes I'll even see Catholics arguing with Protestants, you'll see the weaponization of history. And really it gets into, like, how do we understand history, especially, like, questions about church-state relations.
So when you start to think about this as a concept, and what we want to talk about is, obviously not everyone is going to be perfect historians. We're not trying to act like unless you have a PhD in history, you can't talk. It's not even the case that I would be one to argue that we probably know less definitively and assuredly about history than we think. We know what the church teaches. We know what the Lord has provided for us through the magisterium to believe about the church. But when people start drawing second and third sort of inferences from the past, that's when things can get a bit interesting. And I think that's what we want to talk about today, is that there's many ways that if you start talking about the Catholic past, that people, instead of maybe just looking at what happened and trying to dwell about maybe some similarities, they'll start to act like it drives discussions in a way that then you better get your history right. Now, why I think that we can talk about this, I don't know if I can. Maybe I'm just blabbering. But you have a degree in historical theology. So the idea is there's something to looking at our faith historically and deriving ideas from it.
Well, to give people a real easy example that I think a lot of listeners will be able to grab a hold of, even how we name historical periods says something about how we're reading things. So do we understand Elizabeth I of England to be good Queen Bess? You know,
right.
I mean, this kind of language, it finds its way into the way that we talk about history. Or a big one is the Dark Ages. Were the Middle Ages dark and oppressive, or were they something else? And so the language that we use already comes loaded with certain assumptions about the direction of history.
Right. So if, and Lord knows I want to not, like, throw this show out because I've enjoyed many times watching it, but Monty Python is usually a good bellwether that if you start thinking of historical periods and your first idea is a Monty Python sketch, you've probably not got all the nuances of the time period. So the two easy ones I can think of is if you think the Inquisition is the no one expects the Inquisition scene from Monty Python, you probably have it wrong. Or if you think about, like, Monty Python and the Search for the Holy Grail, and you have the, you know, the farmers complaining about, you know, mud and, like, women with swords and stuff like this. If those are your two ideas of the Inquisition or the Middle Ages, you might have some more research to do. The question starts to be, well, why does this all matter? Maybe you guys really are dorking out. Are you just worried about Catholics not being able to pass Catholic Final Jeopardy? Well, I think part of this starts to go when you're talking about what the church needs to do now, especially in the realm of this show, which is the idea of the common good and Catholic social teaching. If you start to have narratives of the present as obviously not perfect, but, you know,
better than the past,
exponentially better than the past. Yeah, right. Yeah. that you start to skew what our discussions are going to be. On one hand, you can skew it by acting like the past is horrible and we're so better off from not having anything to do with it, but you can also skew it the other way and galvanize the past and act like nothing was ever wrong when obviously there was all sorts of things happening. But when we start talking about things like subsidiarity or solidarity or anything like this, it's important to have a healthy, I don't know if skepticism is the right word, have a healthy comportment towards the present, and that starts with how we look at the past.
Well, to prove to listeners that we're not coming in with, like, insurmountable biases in this regard, Bo, you and I have talked about, like, just as frustrating for us is sometimes, like, Christian apologists who will act like they sort of have this interpretation of history, like Christianity invented all that is good.
Right.
And without it, you know, I don't know. I mean, you're right to point out that there needs to be a balance there. Like, we can't act, I don't think, that everything is perfect now or exponentially better than the past. On the other hand, like, we can point to civilizations that weren't Christian that had amazing developments or, you know, certain achievements. And so, like, we have to speak. There is something to be said if you're going to be talking to others about the faith to have this kind of informed perspective where you're not overstating things but also not, you know, just, like, crapping on all that's come before.
Well, and I think that there's a reason that we end up doing this quite a bit, that it's not inconsequential that history comes up when we talk about Christianity. And the best way to put this is if we have an incarnational faith, then we believe that the world that God himself decided to incarnate himself in matters. He lived in the world. He lived in history. You can have someone like Tolkien saying the true myth that became history, all of these things like this. Suffice it to say that we believe that the time is now. You know, all of that Old Testament talk about the coming of the age and the final age, we believe in that we're in that sort of age in a way, right? That Jesus has made a definitive difference by becoming incarnate and then having the church be born in time. With that said, that doesn't mean that we're going to have documentary-level knowledge of the past, but that we owe a respect to the past. I think sometimes we get caught up in sort of modern hopes that the past is like a bug stuck in amber, to go all Jurassic Park metaphor on us, and that we're going to go like drill it out and find it. But when it's more something like our parents or our grandparents, right, we show reverence to the past by treating it well. And it seems to me that if we exploit the past either as horrible or golden age, it's something more akin to not treating and honoring our parents or our grandparents or our great-grandparents.
Well, to put some more flesh on these bones, as we've said on the show, Bo and I both went to Duke Divinity School, which is a Protestant div school. And there, Christendom was kind of a dirty word, right, Bo?
Yeah.
When people talked about that period of church history, well, Christendom, you had Christians who were in power, and that was seen as somehow in tension with what Christ had taught or said. But I think there's a way as Catholics where we can look back on that and not pretend like it was a golden age, but say, well, we do this for sure. Like, we say that someone like Louis the Ninth was a saint, right?
Right.
Do I have the right Louis?
Yes.
Yes, I think Louis the Ninth, St. Louis the Ninth. And so, obviously, I mean, as in a Catholic understanding, like, just having power is not evil in and of itself. It's obviously, like, how we use it. And so there's different ways even of reading the gospel and understanding, like, look, Christians were kings, and some of them did that very well to the point of holiness.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that's... where in the grad school, like you're talking about, Christendom almost became like an adjective for something bad. Like if you're like, hey, have you tried out like that new Honda Civic? You're like, it's so Christendom. Like, oh, I'll avoid it, right?
I mean, these tater tots taste like they were fried during Christendom.
Oh, man, yeah, this... I thought we were friends, but then it turned all like Christendom. Yeah, I mean, it would get ridiculous. So not only does this skew our ability to talk about the past honestly, which is what I think people think we might be talking about, our worry is that you can't even talk about the present well. So if you have a warped understanding about Christendom, which, by the way, that's like centuries of the church, right? So part of it starts to be, which part of Christendom are you even talking about, right? Thousands of miles, different people, all sorts of ages. If we're going to lump Christendom in a certain way and use it as a cipher either to laud something or to bash something, we start to be unable and incapable of having honest discussions about any sort of way forward. And that's what I see. We start to think about huge topics that if we had a show in an open line, we would get all sorts of people saying all sorts of things and being angry. But if we're going to galvanize the past in a certain way to where we weaponize it, we're not going to be able to talk about now or the future very well.
Well, Bo, let me bounce an idea off you. Is that okay?
Sure. It's just live. It's just live radio.
Yeah. This is safe. One thing that I wrestle with, like in talking about all these questions, is like, as Catholics, we learn from the past, so we say we want to imitate the saints because they embodied, you know, Christ-likeness.
Right.
But you get, I don't know, I'll just be upfront. Like, so we've talked on the show about the Benedict option.
Right.
This author, Rod Dreher, says, like, we should be like St. Benedict and do this, that, and the other. And part of it is a question about, like, how well he's actually understanding what Benedict was about. Like, I think there's also a danger there in conflating the past and the present. Like, how do we learn from the past well without pretending that we can just sort of ape what Benedict or Padre Pio or St. Therese or whoever happens to be what they did?
I think one way that we always have to keep this in mind is that if the past is always vindicating what you're doing and, like, you think that everything's coming up roses in your imitation of the past, that's usually a bad sign. I think about this in terms of the New Testament, right? If you're using the apostles to vindicate what you're doing, but you never mention how often the apostles got it wrong, right? How often they were rebuked, how hard it was for them to understand what Jesus was ultimately about. If none of your narrative contains that, you know, you're obviously sort of misreading the New Testament. I think that starts to be the same way. If you're only using the past to hammer your enemies and vindicate what you do, that's at least a first sign that you're either you have the past wrong or you're not using it in its fullness.
So if some of these things end up being too convenient, you have to start to wonder, like, am I really like delving into the past, or am I just kind of like using this, you know, for the sake of my own pet cause or whatever it happens to be?
Yeah, and I think an easy one is like the black legend, right? So the idea that like England, I should say, merry old England, right, took away the bondage of the Roman Church, and everything about Spain was backward and awful and steeped in, like, you know, horribleness, and everything that England was doing was, you know, geared toward the future and light and everything like this. Well, you automatically go, well, why were they saying this? And it was basically to vindicate everything they were doing, right? So, like, yeah, when they did anything, it was because, well, you know, we're not the Spanish. And if you can start to do that, if you can start to make a scapegoat of someone else by comparing them to the past, then, yeah, what you're doing is you're making the past not the time that God has vindicated and has lessons for us. You're making it a millstone to tie around someone else's neck and hope to sink them and make you have an unimpeded way forward.
Well, and for me, like, one easy step that you can take to read the past in a better way is just to make some fine distinctions. And so, like, I think about this with the Protestant Reformation, and sometimes I've heard Catholic teachers or been talking to Catholics, and they say, like, look, you know, Martin Luther, whatever you want to say about him, like, the church was in a rough spot, you know, and they sort of leave it there. But, like, as Catholics, we can say, like, look, at that time, there were leaders who may have been doing unfortunate things, or there were elements of church, say, seminary life that needed to be reformed. We can make the distinction and say, that being the case, Luther's answer was still objectively wrong.
Right. And, you know, when it comes to why will we want to talk about, yeah, Luther and put him under the microscope, the idea, I mean, if you're a historian, there's, you know, like, and that's your job, there's this idea of maybe some sort of, like, neutrality. You just want to, like, know the facts. Already that starts to be complicated, but that's sort of like a, yeah, discussion for another show. For us, or if we're talking to people who are talking and listening on the radio right now, the question is, why are you talking about Luther? And presumably, it's almost always because either for yourself or someone else, you want to ask, you know, what was going on? Why did Luther and the Reformation happen? How do we navigate our faith and the reality of our faith because of that? Or how do we convince someone that despite this, that, and the other, that it, you know, they should still come home to the Catholic Church? Well, I can tell you that if you're just going to say, like, well, Luther actually was a Satanist and, like, you know, it's all black magic, that's not going to work. That's not going to help anyone. That's not going to mend fences. That's not going to make anybody look deeper into the history of the Catholic faith. If you get Luther wrong just to make a point, that will actually hurt your witness for the Catholic Church. On the flip side, if you, like you said, if you kind of, like, give over the baby with the bathwater towards what Luther was saying, it's the same thing. You start, like, maybe despairing your own faith and start running into real danger in your own life. The way forward is to be as honest as possible, like you said, with real distinctions, so that we can learn whatever lessons there is actually to learn.
Well, and with what you're talking about, this is where you really get into, like, the spiritual side of this, because I know whenever there's scandal in the church, there's always going to be Catholics who struggle and say, is this worth it, right? Or can I keep going in the face of these horrendous things? And there's a way, Bone, you and I were talking about this earlier, where, like, you can look at the past and say, look, this isn't the first time that we've passed through some pretty tough stuff. Or, you know, you can say, like, Jesus said himself that the wheat would grow up with the tares, and, you know, like, so there's good and evil in the church. Now, that being said, I don't think we ever want to give the impression that, like, that being the case, we shouldn't have a righteous anger in the face of great evil. And you can have both, right? And you see this with our Lord, where he situated himself in the history of Israel, and so he was embracing all the baggage that came with that history. And yet, at the same time, he never used that as, like, an excuse for quietism, where when he saw religious leaders who were dropping the ball, you know, that's the angerest that we see Christ in the New Testament.
No, I think that's a great way to put it. I don't know if comfort sounds like a weird way to put it, but I don't know a better word. I mean, you know, when you come down to it, right, when you think about even in plays, right, like, why do we like tragic plays? Because there's this strange sort of comfort, right, in the catharsis of seeing someone else. Okay, so I mean something more like that. I don't mean, like you said, be self-satisfied, don't be angry anymore, be quietest. But there is a sort of quote-unquote comfort knowing, right, that we, the church, have survived the gates of hell before. That we're not the first generation to deal with the gates of hell. Whether we need to say if we're dealing with it worse than others, I mean, I don't know if that sort of comparison really is healthy, but it is healthy, I refrain almost to use the word, to say we've been through this, and we shouldn't be surprised that the devil is taking haymaker swings at the bride of Christ. But that we can gird ourselves up knowing that other people have faced this and that we can look to them for ideas about what to do. And you're right, it starts with Jesus and the mystery of allowing Judas to be one of his, you know, the first apostles, the first bishops, right? The first apostles.
Yeah.
But this proceeds with things like the Western Schism. You don't even need to, like, talk about the Eastern Schism or Protestantism. Look at the Western Schism, right? Look at the Avignon Papacy. Look at the various times throughout history where laxity in the bishops and the clergy became a huge deal. And you can read those very despairing accounts and realize, right, that the Christians of the time felt like us, but that there were also people who did something about it. You look at St. Peter Damian. You look at Pope Gregory the VII, you start to look at these people who, in the face of all this, decided they were going to do something about it. Laity as well, right? Or even, like, you know, Francis of Assisi. There's a saint that answers every one of the attacks of the devil. And thanks be to God, this isn't the first time this has ever happened. It's, like you said, a tragedy that we're living through it. But that we have the assurance that the church will make its way through it, and that God will call saints to help us make it through it.
Well, and for this first part of the show, we've been talking a lot about our understanding of the church and, you know, delving deeper into history and sort of, like, informing our own relationship to the church. I think in the second half of the show, we can get into the common good and the social order, and how do we sort of, like, judge a society, whether it's just, whether it's good, how do we work towards, you know, a better, I hate the phrase, a better world, but that's what I'm coming up with right now.
A better world, bud. What a good way. Yeah, like that. So if you want to stick around and hear about a better world, this is the Uncommon Good. We will be back after these messages. Man, but I feel alive. I'm just glad the Eagle's back.
It's good to have the Eagle back.
Yeah, good to have the old Eagle. So if you want to go and talk to us about how we don't know what we're talking about with history, or if you want to go put up, what is it, GIFs or GIFs, right, of No One Expects the Spanish Inquisition, you can do that on Facebook, Iowa Catholic Radio, the Twitter handle, at IA Catholic Radio. The Zip Whip line, 515-223-1150, hashtag UCG if you want to talk to us. And then, as always, we have our bi-monthly newsletter. Like I said, only comes twice a month, so it doesn't fill up your inbox. Keeps you up to date about everything that's happening in the Diocese of Des Moines and elsewhere in Iowa. The big thing, I think, coming up, of course, is that the fair is getting ready to gear up. You can keep up with updates there. So like I said, if you have anything you want to talk to us, there you go. Find us at those places. This is The Uncommon Good. Stick around. We'll be back.
Faith Journey, the Catechetical Institute, will be hosting a talk by Jeff Cavins on Wednesday, August 1st at 6:30 p.m. at the Pastoral Center downtown. Jeff is an international Catholic speaker and the founder of the Catechetical Institute in St. Paul, Minnesota. He will be talking about the activated disciple and providing information about the next class at the Catechetical Institute here in Des Moines, which begins this September. The talk is free and open to the public, so please join us.
Support for Dowling Catholic Sports 365 is provided in part by Ashworth Vision Clinic, with two licensed optometrists, Barbara Sheets, a Dowling Catholic graduate, and Dr. Todd Pedig. The Ashworth Vision Clinic team provides complete eye exams, contact lenses, glasses, glaucoma testing, and pre- and post-operative care. Ashworth Vision Clinic is located at Ashworth and 60th Street in West Des Moines, 515-440-4610, online at ashworthvision.com.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Thank you, Divine Treasures, for your support of our new Storm Alert weather package. Divine Treasures is a Catholic book and gift store celebrating 25 years of serving the Des Moines community. Their mission is to help Catholics know, love, and keep their faith in our Lord Jesus Christ and His Church. Divine Treasures, where you find great Catholic books, beautiful Bibles, rosaries, jewelry, statues, and religious gifts for those memorable events in your life. 5701 Hickman Road in Des Moines, 515-255-5230. That's 515-255-5230.
We're back with The Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr. We're talking about distortions of history, using the past to vindicate all sorts of squirrely ideas in the present, and how it is that we as Catholics owe a reverence and a respect to the past that does better than that. But I think when we left off, you wanted to say that, you know, we've been talking about different eras of the past and maybe how they sometimes get used for particular arguments, specifically to our show and talking about the common good. I think there's a way in which if we start to demonize certain past aspects, past parts of the Catholic Church, that we really can start to give a thumbs up to aspects of our modern culture that maybe we would be better off, I'm not going to say repenting of, but asking ourselves questions, doing an examination of conscience about.
Well, Bo, I hope this is okay. Like, I won't name names, but we have a mutual acquaintance on Twitter, and he kind of threw down the gauntlet. And if I could just share that, I think it sets the stage for the discussion, actually. So
right. This
Twitter author, and if people have the gumption to go out and find the tweet, he put it out there in public, so... He said, if you're some kind of old-fashioned Catholic who condemns liberalism, ask yourself one question. Can I trace my ancestry back to nobility/wealth? If not, then without the market, you'd be an illiterate muck farmer right now if you had not died in infancy. Now, what this author is getting at is he's saying, like, look, if you're going to condemn the liberal order, the way that we structure our society now, you don't really have any grounds to do so unless you can trace your ancestry back to nobility, because without the way things are now, you'd be a peasant farmer, like just eking out a subsistent existence.
Yeah, M-U-C-K, muck, which is, and the next side note is people have gone absolutely crazy making jokes about this. So there is now a cottage industry on Twitter of people saying, like, they're illiterate muck farmers and, like, what the day in the life of one is like and how they're having a good time and everything like that. There will be T-shirts imminently. I just know it. But to our point, right, there's a way in which, like, to be charitable, there's something true to this, right? It's very easy in an air-conditioned room to talk about the glories of the past. This is absolutely, absolutely the case. I myself will use this when teaching classes to go, you know, you can be like, you can poo-poo the idea of being in a classroom, but, you know, your ancestors were probably at 1 o'clock out in a field shoveling, you know, pig refuse, right? So there's obviously a way in which it's easy, beyond easy, to talk about the glories of the past. But I think what you and I were trying to get at is there's something missing from this look back in history. And people maybe through mockery or jokes have been getting at this. But it starts to be a question of asking, at what price is progress? I think that's what we want to sort of alight upon.
Yeah, well, you know, my own writing and studying has been in the thought of John Henry Newman. And he once wrote, and this is maybe hyperbole, but he said, like, the Catholic Church would rather that the sun and the moon fall from the sky than that one person even commit a single venial sin. And what Newman was driving at is that when we think about our life together, starting with the Church as Catholics, but even looking at society as a whole, like, as Christians, we have to be careful that we have the right criteria. So we don't ultimately judge the goodness of a community on the basis of how comfortable it is.
How
right?
many pineapples there are.
How many pineapples there are. And so in that regard, when this author talks about, like, liberalism, I think in some ways he's equating technological progress with certain assumptions about human life. And we first have to separate out those two. But even if a society could provide a certain level of comfortability, there are ways. So, I mean, if I could be so bold, like, you look at our own society, and on the surface, it's gleaming, it looks great. It doesn't take very much digging before you see things like, you know, you think about what's happened since the Roe v. Wade court ruling, and those are a judgment against us no matter how comfortable or affluent we end up being.
Yeah, and one of the things about this, too, is to sort of talk about an improper equivalence, right? So when you mm-hmm. talk about looking at one age and looking at our own, there's the question of always trying to make sure the comparison is an equal and reasonable one to make. Absolutely, it's true that plenty of people were quote-unquote illiterate farmers. I think what you might ask about our age is how many people, with the benefit of 13 years of schooling, can barely even really be said to be literate. And it's not that they're illiterate, I like to point this out. They could read, it's that they're illiterate, right? Like, how many people, you know, walk through adult life and really don't take advantage of the fact that we can read or that we, like, have all this information at our hands? With very little digging, like you said, we can start to say, maybe everyone you know lives in an air-conditioned house, but how much of the modern world has to work twice, five times, 10 times harder to make that life available for a particular group of people? You can start to ask, you know, honest questions. Is common misery better than, you know, like the concentrated misery of a certain group so that others can benefit from it? The point to make, right, is if we start looking at the past and go, you know, there was the nobles and then there was illiterate muck farmers, well, you're going to be able to vindicate a lot of things we're doing now without necessarily being fair in making that sort of vindication. And I think a lot of people have pointed this out. You don't have to romanticize the peasants of the past in order to, like, honestly say there's something to their life that really should be held up in judgment against ours. That doesn't mean that tomorrow you or I would want to be peasants. Lord knows I would die as a very lazy, overweight man. but I'm not going to allow myself to act like it's obvious their life had no merit and that it's, like, good that it's prescribed to the dustbin of history, when there really is something to their life and its integration of the faith that puts mine to shame.
Well, Bo, when you're talking there, it reminds me of, and I'm probably going to butcher this Bible verse, but Jesus said something to the effect that, like, the wise man brings treasures out of what is old and what is new. And that's a perennial calling for each one of us. Like, how do we live in the age to which we were called? By drawing on the best parts of the past. And so, you know, for myself, Bo, when I've been reading these Twitter conversations online, I thought there's a way you can have gratitude. Like, each time I go to the doctor, I'm grateful for certain elements of modern medicine, and yet still look at my own life and say, like, the past, in a sense, is an indictment against me in this regard. And so, like, when we're talking about muckraking peasant farmers, you know, in a lot of ways, when you read about that period of history, you can say, like, look, well, these folks had really tight-knit kinship networks, you know, so there was a closeness and family in a way that people took care of each other, where, like, modern individualistic society can really corrode that.
Well, I think you look at something like Eamon Duffy's wonderful book, The Stripping of the Altars, which is a massive book. I'm not acting like it's summer beach reading. But he does a good job of pointing out that the peasant Catholicism of England had an extremely lively culture that the ruling class in England saw fit to destroy for its own political benefit, right? And yep. He has all sorts of archaeological evidence about how maybe it was the case that a lot of the peasantry couldn't read, but certainly they had a lively understanding of the faith in an oral culture that, you know, in many ways surpasses ours because of the sort of fervency that many oral cultures have. Now, this is not to say that peasantry didn't have its own problems. One only has to look at, like, what, complaining clergy has to say in the Middle Ages about superstition and, you know, witches and everything like this to point out that, right, it wasn't like that this was like some sort of like pure, unblemished Catholicism. But I go back to our principal point that if you look to the past and use it to only vindicate what you are currently doing now, there's probably something you're doing wrong. And when it comes to the common good, we don't have to want a return to the past to say that the past has many things not only to teach us, but to rightly point the finger at and ask us if this really is the best way to use the progress that we really have enjoyed. So if we have all of this medicine, right, are we using it well? And certainly, I think that if you could ask some of these peasants in heaven if they think that we're using these technological advances in medicine well, that they would have many a thing to tell us about what we're doing wrong in that regard.
Well, when you mentioned Duffy's Stripping of the Altars, one thing that struck me about that book is there was either a lot of social pressure or just practicing aristocracy who said, look, I've made a lot of money. I'm going to spend it mostly on beautifying the local church or having masses prayed for the dead, you know? And I think of our quote-unquote aristocracy, and again, you know, like, we blow our money on a lot of junk. That's an indictment against us. But beyond that, like, Bo, when you're talking about, like, the rough edges of the Middle Ages or being honest about the superstition or whatever is involved, I know one of your favorite works, literary works, is Geoffrey Chaucer's Canterbury Tales.
Right.
And maybe part of the health of a society is, like, can it laugh at itself?
Right.
You know, Chaucer clearly has a great love for his own people, but he's willing to, like, be farcical about some of the goofiness. And, like, in our own age, do we have this kind of seriousness, like, oh, progress, things keep getting better, and we're unable to see some of the tensions, some of the hypocrisies, and also, you know, make fun of ourselves at the right time and occasion?
Well, and, I mean, maybe that's the right thing to point out if people go, like, did Bud and Bo literally just dedicate an entire show to Twitter conversations they've seen? One of the things that I enjoyed about it is, so there, you're right, there was this, like, uber seriousness about, like, you yeah. know, how dare you all speak about these things, you know, if you're enjoying, and, you know, by the way, the worst form of argument, if and this goes across the field, Catholics do this as well, too, is if you go, like, oh, if you hate social media, why are you using it, right? Or, oh, you hate technology, why don't you live in a field? You know, you're like, okay, guys, there's a way in which someone can be reasonably critiquing something, realizing they must use it to critique it, right? Yeah. So, you know, like this uber seriousness of like, how dare you all, unless you were like nobility. And to be quite frank, the sort of sheer Chaucerian sort of farcicalness that is occurring because of this actually fills me with hope, because obviously the people who are making these jokes don't want to go be illiterate muck farmers, but they're really having a good time that shows that I think we're able to, you know, turn the telescope back on ourselves and allow ourselves to be, seen in the open air, the antiseptic of clean air.
Bo, to get back to sort of like maybe the more pious side of things, or looking at our own spiritual lives, you mentioned earlier some saints who have criticized popes, right? What were a couple of the names that you threw out there?
Well, St. Peter Damian is one I was thinking of, but then also, famously, St. Catherine of Siena.
Catherine of Siena. Or even you could look at someone like Dante, who wrote the Divine Comedy. But what I have in mind is, like, there is, I think, a time and a place for this sort of thing. I think you have to be incredibly spiritually grounded before you do that. Like, it's so easy to sound off, especially, I think, with the social media tools that we have. And so for myself, even the last 48 hours, I have to admit, I've been looking at past tweets and saying, like, was that wise or prudent? Like, certainly, we want to apply pressure at the right, in the right way.
You're talking about the Tommy Pham trade, right? That's what...
this mostly gets back to baseball.
No, I'm kidding. Go ahead. Sorry.
But, you know, I don't know. I was talking to a priest once, and he was saying, like, whenever you go into an exorcism, like, you yourself have to be... And, of course, as Catholics, we reserve this to priests who have been trained to do so. But you have to be spiritually grounded. You have to go to confession first. You have to examine your own conscience. And I feel like when we talk about prudently criticizing what needs to be criticized, you have to have the same caution in this area as well.
Yeah, I mean, people go, rightfully so, Dante was willing to, frankly, put a setting pope in hell when he wrote the Inferno. Dante also was in exile and had gone through his own sort of purgatorio, right, through all of the machinations. And in fact, we often forget this because in many ways, and some people accuse him of this, right, Dante writes this great book just to, like, bash his enemies and to show how awesome he is. But also the whole premise, right, of the Divine Comedy is that he was lost in a dark wood and he himself was going to hell if it wasn't for the people who intervened for him. So that's always an interesting dynamic, I think, to keep in mind. I think that goes back to this, right, with Twitter and the ease of firing off, like, the grand solutions to these problems with the church is, I mean, A, are they really grand solutions? B, is there any sort of, like, penitential aspect that goes into, like you said, spiritually being ready to make these comments. But I think for a lot of us, even just some sort of willingness to put ourselves under the microscope starts to be what's important. So to throw out a good example, I think, of this is Matthew Walther in The Week wrote an article about what it's like to be like an Evelyn Waugh fanboy, and clearly was throwing himself under the bus, right? Like, he wrote all this stuff out and then admitted that, like, he was basically doing an autobiography of a certain point of his life. And first of all, it's hilarious. Second of all, a lot of the books that he said was, like, a necessary reading to be a Waugh fanboy I have read. But it's one of those deals where it's such a great way to say, you know, there's a truth about myself. I love myself with my foibles and things like this, but willing to call myself into account to get better. And maybe for some of us who aren't Dante quite yet, that's what we should aim for, right? If we're going to criticize aspects of the church and use the past as a sort of bellwether, are we going to start with ourselves and try to make ourselves better? Or are we going to act like we're the eye in the middle of the storm with no problem and point to everyone else?
Well, and you have to count the cost beforehand, because if you're going to embrace a prophetic mantle or even walk the path of holiness, you know, Mother Teresa said that we're not called to be successful, but to be faithful. And one thing, Bo, I'll be honest, like teaching servant leadership with you at Mercy College, like as we started to design that course, so much of it came about, like the people who have taken on the servant role, their lives did not end in a bed of roses. We can certainly point to the saints, like someone like Padre Pio, who was vilified during his own time, but even someone like St. Damian of Molokai. So we present this, you know, we present St. Damian to the students. They're like, oh, yeah, how did his life turn out? Well, he died from leprosy.
Right.
And then after this sacrificial death, folks accused him of all sorts of, you know, terrible things. And so you really do, I think, have to count the cost before you embrace this role.
My favorite part of STEAM teaching servant leadership is still when someone like thought they really had us pinned, and they're like, oh, so would you guys consider yourselves servant leaders? Then we almost like together said, no.
Yeah.
And then it was a great conversation because we were like, no, mostly we teach this class as a sort of constant reminder about how much we need to improve in this.
Well, you know, I think of the New Testament, like judgment starts with the house of God. And like you were saying, you're talking about Matthew Walther putting himself under the microscope in kind of, you know, a less serious sort of way. But anytime, yeah, we have to put our lives under the microscope constantly.
So, I mean, to start kind of wrapping this up as we get to the end of the show, again, I know that this can sound like a big sort of nerd fest talking about the past, but
nerd fest.
It is inescapable, right, that the church, we talk about the past. History is living because Jesus Christ became incarnate in history. The question is, how do we use history well?
Yeah.
And, you know, we can weaponize it either way. We can make it a golden nostalgic past. We can make it the horrible, death knell that we've progressed from. And the big thing to notice for most of our listeners, I think, is to say, how are we using the past? Are we using it to too easily vindicate what we already think, or are we using it to challenge ourselves to become more faithful? But I think in all of this, there is still a sense of calm or comfort, not, and I put that in quotes, right, not to make us feel better, but to know really there is no challenge left in the church that the communion of saints hasn't faced. It's going to be in a new way, a new key. Of course, they didn't have to deal with Twitter, but they had to deal with their own scandals, their own difficulties, their own economic problems. And so we can really turn to the communion of saints and ask for the way forward, not even in, but especially when we feel like things are hopeless or full of despair.
Well, and if I could throw in one more quick thing, you know, like earlier we were kind of joking or critical about our time at Duke Div and the talk around Christendom. But one thing I learned there that I was really appreciative of is that when we talk about these matters, we really should start with the church first. And what I mean by that is, like, we need to find times to speak out to the broader community. But really, like, square one is in our parish, in our homes, is Christ King. And that's been a theme on our show from day one. But, like, we might not be able to control who the president is, who the Supreme Court justices are, but we can certainly gather as the people of God and say, like, how do we measure up to what Christ has called us to?
And it's like you said, it's not a matter of being quiet. It's not a matter of, like, ducking your head and only attending to your family. I think the idea is sometimes the protest or the revolution or however you want to put it just starts with you being willing to take the step forward, the steps that are right in front of you. And, you know, that's one thing in servant leadership I think we've said over and over again. All these servant leaders, right, they end up with difficult lives, or maybe they're killed or thrown in jail. But what you find out is very few of them woke up and they're like, I'm going to be like a revolutionary today. I'm going to wake up and be a servant leader and cause all sorts of trouble. What they found out is that they were just being faithful to what God was calling them there and then.
Yeah.
Trouble found them. And so that sounds like a really weird way, but I hope it fills us with hope, right? The way into sainthood is not anything so out of our control. It's being faithful to what God is calling us to right now. And even in the midst of the difficulties we all face, and like we said, it's very obvious if you read the news, take heart, friends, because God has called you to an immediate way forward to do something about this. But it's not going to be some sort of escapist thing to the past or the future. It's going to be right now in your life.
Sorry to go less serious, but when you said trouble will find you, I was thinking about that that time the Iowa Catholic Radio had a float in the city parade.
Yeah.
Remember, we were like right in front of the haunted house theme?
Yeah.
And there was that scary clown who was walking around with like this blare horn.
Right.
And just like scaring children and families. And
we were,
I know that's the image that popped to mind. You said we were just doing some great good, like spreading the word about Iowa Catholic Radio, then some clown's blowing a horn in my face.
Yeah, yeah. The Democratic Socialists were in front of us in the haunted house with like the chainsaws and everything were behind us. And right in the middle, Iowa Catholic Radio. I think that's really a good image to go on. This is the Uncommon Good. May Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in our hearts, in our families, our city, our state, our nation, the entire world, galaxies upon galaxies. This is the Uncommon Good. We will be back next Wednesday. There we go.
Ah.
The eagle, he's winded. He's been resting, right? So he's not used to, like, yeah, he was, well, Tony said he was having a smoke.
The original complaint was about the eagle scaring people as they're driving, so I thought Tony was testing, like, different levels.
Yeah, right. So, like, very quiet eagle. Nice eagle.
Yeah.
Burping eagle, yeah. Well, so, but I think, like we've been pointing out, the big thing is the Iowa State Fair. That's what's coming up. It is imminent, right? It's August 1st. The fair is from the 9th to the 19th. I honestly always forget how long the fair lasts. And as we've pointed out before, my wife loves the fair. So, I'm going to be there twice. I'm going to be there twice for Mercy. I'll be with there for Iowa Catholic Radio. Basically, if you go, I think it's like Thursday the 16th, there's going to be a lot of Bo at tables if you want to go check that out.
Well, I love the fact that Iowa Catholic Radio has confession offered there. Like, we helped to provide that. And we were joking at the end of the show today about, like, the parade. But sometimes I think being a witness for Christ is just taking the time to be out in public and letting those graced encounters happen. So that's great.
Yeah, we're going to be at the parade, then Christ Our Life Conference coming up in September. But real quick, we're out of time. What are some things they can do if they want to participate with Iowa Catholic Radio by listening?
Yeah, if you're an early riser, there's Catholic Bible in a Year at 5 a.m. That transitions into the rosary. And then at night as well, we've got the rosary at 9:30, followed by a reflection by Father Andrew Winchettle on the gospel.
Yep. So, and then if you want to be a part of our ministry, donating to our ministry allows the word of Jesus Christ to span walls 24/7, everything by being a part of our ministry. This is the Uncommon Good. Thank you all so much for joining us. We will be back next week.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard every week on wonderful Catholic stations like this one and anytime on podcast. Just search for The Uncommon Good.